Welcome to the Global Connection, a Tel Aviv University podcast. Journey with us as we discover how TAU's academic community and friends are engaging with and helping to shape this ever-changing world.
Hi, everyone. I'm Larry French, and I'm a student here at Tel Aviv University in the International Masters of Disaster Management program. Today, I'm excited to have the head of the program, Professor Buria Edini, joining us for an episode of the Global Connection. Buria is an expert in emergency management for disaster medicine, focusing on public health and healthcare systems. But her expertise spans many aspects of disaster management. Today, she'll be joining us to discuss Israel's crisis response since the October 7th terrorist attacks. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Edini. To begin, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about your own background in disaster management. For years, you've worked with the IDF, specifically helping Israeli hospital systems preparing for disasters. Can you talk a little bit about how your work has led you to this career in academia?
Thank you very much, Larry, for the opportunity. And it's a pleasure to be, you know, in this podcast when we're actually usually collaborating on education. And now we're also looking into dissemination of knowledge and so on. I actually have been in several positions concerning disaster management in Israel, both in the military and in civilian systems. And in Israel, they usually go together very, very closely. As many other societies, when there's a lack of sufficient resources, the army and the civilian healthcare system work together in order to prepare the Israeli medical systems for all types of adversities. So I started actually as a mental health specialist, and I enlisted to the army. And I very much wanted not only to work on the individual level, but also on the systemic level, which led me to disaster management. And the Ministry of Health asked the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, to help in preparing the medical system for emergencies. And that's how I started, which led to a very close collaboration with the Ministry of Health, which again led to continuing the military service, but on the other end of the stick, as you can say. And at some point of time, it seemed that we need not only to do things, but also to study them, to research and understand what are the different resources, what are the different modes of operation, which led me to the academic career.
Now, can you describe your personal experience since October 7th? Even though you spend all of your time in this disaster management world, did you find yourself in a state of shock yourself that day?
I think all of us were at first very much surprised and disbelieving that this can happen. Now, I learned about it at first from a very personal level. My daughter, which is pregnant, called me very early and said, "Did you hear what had happened?" And my husband has been enlisted. Her husband is an engineer, not a civilian one. And very early in that day, he was called up. So it was getting up to a different situations where the information slowly sunk in. And we understood that this is not something that we actually experienced before. The scope of it, the extent, the seeing it on television in real life, people calling for help and the help is being delayed. So it was a personal and a professional experience all combined together. And it was certainly not like anything that we experienced before. I remember thinking something that I also thought at 9/11, which was then, and in 7 October, I thought that, well, I was here when history changes.
Do you feel like we can compare October 7th crisis to other wars and crises, or is this kind of its own category of kind of response?
You know, there are commonalities and diversities between many types of adversities. People have related to October 7th in relation to what happened in 9/11 because of the sheer shock and the ability or the capacity to actually come into a civilian society and damage it so severely. Others have compared it to the Holocaust, saying the sheer cruelty and atrocities that were made were comparable to that. But so there are, of course, similar characteristics, certainly the horrific repercussions. But each adversity has its own specific characteristics, which is, in my opinion, the principles of managing it may be common, but it has its own unique and specific characteristics.
And since October 7th, how has it been for you? Have you been involved in crisis response efforts directly? Have you been supporting this in any way?
Both. I always, throughout the years, I have one foot in the practical world in the field and another in the education and the academic system. So, of course, on the level of the academia, researching immediately in order to understand what we need and must learn from what is happening in order to give a good response. This was something that was immediately set in. But at the same time, I also worked with the Ministry of Health. I was part of a committee that actually was looking to what preparedness we need to immediately initiate if this conflict would expand to the northern zone of the country, to the northern front. And so I was in both of those worlds, actually looking into the practical response and what we need to plan ahead, but also looking at the academic and research element in the education, decide are we or are we not going to start the academic year? And in the research, of course, learning what has to be learned immediately.
In disaster management, we talk a lot about risk assessment, how important risk assessment is. Of course, no two disasters are the same. We've talked about how this is significantly larger than anything else Israel experienced in the past. Do you feel like the country was prepared for October 7th in kind of the response and the steps leading up to kind of where we are now?
Theoretically, we were prepared. In Israel, we have a very close interaction between the different first responders and the emergency authorities. We had the plans. We were training, initiating different programs to make sure that our different personnel are ready and so on. We had the mechanisms in place, the communication, the reporting systems, how to build situation awareness and so on. But when we looked at what happened in October 7th, things did not work according to what we expect. Even in elements that we had so much experience with, for example, evacuation of patients, how to distribute them between many hospitals in order to make sure that they have the best possible medical response and so on. So people in all the hierarchical elements and in all the different organizations were shocked and surprised. And we don't always work according to what we planned. And I think this was also apparent at what happened, both in the military and the civilian realms and arenas on October 7th.
And related to that, we see that we can look at the government's actions. We can also look at the military, the economy, healthcare, a lot of different sectors that were impacted. Would you say the crisis response is different? Do you feel like some sectors are recovering faster or responded better than others?
Yes, but that's always the situations, okay? There are elements, the army, for example, you expect them to be ready 24/7. The healthcare system, for example, is one that has undergone many training sessions, a lot of adversity that they had to deal with and so on. So they were better prepared and so on in comparison to maybe some others. But I don't think the comparison is important to see which is better or which is worse, because what we need is a holistic response. So you always look at the response according to the weakest link in the chain. So there are many things that we have seen that did not work as well as we may have expected. We have to take into account that this was a very irregular adversity, one which we didn't have to deal with, in my opinion, ever since the War of Independence. So it may be, we may understand some of the things that happened, but the most important thing is to learn where are the weaknesses, where we can and should do better, and how to make sure that we are at any point of time prepared to work as a linked system in order to provide the most effective response.
So I'm wondering as well, can you talk about the public response? How integral has grassroots and civilian efforts been towards helping the country to recover and cope?
I think they're the best link in this chain, the public and the grassroots organizations, as you have referred to them, they immediately went into a very effective response. We saw, you remember that we actually arrived at October 7th when there was a big controversy in the Israeli society. And some of those grassroots organizations, such as Brothers in Arms and so on, were an organized entity with a completely different aim and objectives. But they made the change very, very quickly in order, for example, to respond to the needs even of the military, of those recruiting units and so on, and help them logistically. They helped the population in different places where they needed so many resources, even for things like water and food and evacuation and logistic support and so on. I think these grassroots organizations went immediately into action, and they proved themselves so important and so effective for a pretty long period of time. They made a much better response and management of providing for the immediate needs than some of the governmental and more organized formal entities.
So since there's so much related to October 7th that we're currently still dealing with, we're trying to fight a war, we're trying to bring back the hostages, we're still trying to manage a lot of things internally. From an emergency management perspective, how does this all fit together? Are these views the same crisis? Are these separate crises that are just closely connected?
As I said a minute ago, we started this crisis, this security crisis, when we had another crisis, a judicial one, a societal one, and so on. It seemed for a certain period of time that we were putting aside some of the controversies. We're working together. We saw the solidarity, of course, that is much strengthened, the attachment to the country, the patriotism, and so on. So it seemed as if we were putting our elements that we don't agree upon, we're putting it aside, and we're all fighting for the same cause, our security, our existence, our ability to continue as a nation, and so on. But the controversies are there. They haven't disappeared. They haven't dissolved. And they're starting to be more and more apparent. So, of course, there are different types of disagreements. There are different types of views among varied sectors of the population. You cannot and we should not separate them into different controversies because they impact one another. So they all come into a holistic management of the current crisis, but of course it has different currents, and all of these impact on the way we can actually collaborate and provide a more secure existence to any type of occurrence that happens every day.
And so we've heard a lot of international coverage looking globally about the humanitarian aid efforts in Gaza. From an emergency management perspective, what is one thing you would tell the world about managing delivery of aid to the Palestinians in Gaza?
We have to do both things simultaneously. We're fighting a war which is for our existence as a nation, as a society, and so on. We're not fighting the people of Gaza. We don't want to see hunger. We don't want to see people that are left without shelter, food, medical care, and so on. Now, it's very challenging. It's not easy when the other side is fighting from within the society and using the society as a shield. And we need to make sure that what happened in October 7th will never, ever happen again. So it's a very substantial challenge to make sure that you are fighting the war, trying to achieve all the goals that had been set to ensure the security of the Israeli society and the Israeli nation, and simultaneously also make sure that the civilians, the uninvolved non-combatants, are actually remaining safe. I think the state of Israel has a responsibility to make sure that humanitarian action and humanitarian assistance goes in and reaches the people in Gaza, which that in itself is a challenge because we know the Hamas is trying to actually divert the humanitarian assistance into their own control. But it is our responsibility along with the international community.
Another word we talk about a lot in disaster management is resilience. What sort of lessons in resilience have you seen so far from this crisis?
Well, one of the main elements which we saw, and it wasn't surprising because we see it in different adversity, both here in Israel and globally, is that when there is an existential threat, when there's a joint adversity, people come together. The solidarity is enhanced. The patriotism is strengthened. Even the trust in different types of entity rises. So the societal resilience, which is the ability to actually cope with the situation and adapt to it and even bounce forward to be empowered by what is happening, rises in relation to what was characteristics before the adversity. But it doesn't last over time just by itself. It is then dependent on what the state does in order to make sure that the population actually does get the response that is needed in order to maintain this societal resilience. And here, unfortunately, what we're seeing that over time, the societal resilience, which enhanced very, very substantially on October the 7th, is slowly decreasing. And this must be attended to, in my opinion, immediately in order to make sure that people maintain their trust in their leadership, in the goals and objectives that are set by the governance systems and the solidarity between the different sectors of society in order, again, to be able to manage this substantial challenge.
And taking that a little bit further, what would you say the most critical things are for Israel to address right now in this response and recovery phase?
I think that the policymakers and the governance systems must work based on evidence-based data, not on their own assumptions, what are the needs and expectations of the public, and what is actually what must be put in place in order to make an effective recovery over time. I don't think this is sufficiently done. I don't think there's a sufficient level of actually collaboration between researchers, for example, scientists or different research centers and the policymakers. And I don't think they're open enough to actually look at the data, which has been generated. I mean, there is research, there are data showing, for example, what worries, what concerns the public, what are the public expectations, what are the different needs of the different subsections of the population. And when you disregard that, you actually do not respond to what the public actually needs. For example, we look into the elderly population and if they're the ones who are the most vulnerable. But what we saw, for example, is that the younger ones, the aged 31 to 40, they're the ones that need the main efforts of help. They have young children. They're the one, they're the backbone of the economic situation, the workforce and so on. They feel much more uncertain. They're the ones who go in the military as reserves and so on. And so this is just one example. Another example is what concerns the public. It's not only the security which concerns the public. It's also different levels of trust or political instability. So you have to understand what concerns the public in order to actually provide a sufficient response and an effective one.
And so bringing it back here to your life at Tel Aviv University, as the head of the disaster management program, how do you think about how you might teach emergency management differently in kind of relation to October 7th?
First of all, I think that we have to make sure that we do not focus only on October 7th. I want my students to understand the world of disaster management and what needs to be done in different types of adversities in order to make sure that they are the next leaders of the world. But we cannot disregard what had happened in October 7th, and we have to bring it into the classroom. Now, one of the elements that I think is most important to us here in Tel Aviv at large and specifically in our program is that we want the science and the practice to go together. We want to be careful not to be some ivory tower of science, not to being applicable to what is happening to the field. So that means that we need to bring these two worlds together, make the students understand what are some of the scientific tools that can and should be used, how they can help to understand the challenges of the field and what can be done in order to respond to those challenges, and give them a real capacity to experience both the scientific resources as well as the practical challenges and resources that are there. And having them actually be able to understand how it works in theory and in practice hopefully will make them the most brilliant leaders of disaster management of tomorrow.
And do you think now is an important time to learn about emergency and disaster management? And specifically, do you think Israel is the right place to learn that?
I think it's a perfect place because here, unfortunately, I would have been much happier to say that we live a tranquil life without any type of adversity. But unfortunately, that's not the situation. But on the other hand, it gives us the ability to experience things which never seem the same when you read about them or just hear about them, not experience them firsthand. So being here, being exposed to what it means to be in a society under crisis, to understand what it is when there are security, political, economical constraints and so on, and how they impact on the situations and how the disaster response should take them into account, that's the perfect time to be here and study disaster management.
Do you have any words of advice for someone who's considering pursuing a career in disaster emergency management?
I want to say two things. One, in order to be an effective disaster manager, you need to be very dedicated to studying, on the one hand, understanding all the knowledge that can be accessed, but at the same time, be agile enough and have the flexibility to be understanding of the intricacy of decision-making and how each decision can actually impact different organizations. That's the one element, which again, it's putting everything together in the same basket, theoretical capacity with practical understanding and so on. The other thing I think is trying to understand what is the emotional as well as the cognitive processes that are critical for disaster management. And I'll give it as an example. When the war broke out and the academic program was scheduled to start, the Israeli education academic semester was postponed because many were in the military. But the international ones were here, and we asked them, do you want to be here physically and study in class, or do you want us to switch into online studying? And the majority, without hesitation, said, we want to be here on campus. We want to be able to interact together. We want to study together and make the most of this period of time. And that's what happened. The international program started many weeks before the Israeli one, which shows the dedication, the commitment, the guts, okay, and the courage, because it wasn't a regular situation. But that's what disaster management and the leaders of disaster management are made of.
Is there anything you'd like to add that I didn't ask?
I want everyone to be safe. I want us to be able to study disaster management, but hopefully not have the need to use these tools. And I think the main message that I want to relay is that if once we believe that there is routine life and there is disasters, there isn't this division anymore. I think everyday life is full of adversities, and adversities have to allow us to also continue our routine, maybe some type of emergency routine. So we understand that these two worlds are actually meshed together, and we have to know how to live, taking into consideration both of these occurrences.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Professor Adini. And it's really great that we had this conversation. I got your important insights today. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.